At an Apple event in January 2010, Steve Jobs unveiled the iPad and said, "What this device does is extraordinary. It offers the best way to browse the web, way better than a laptop and way better than a smartphone. It's an incredible experience. It's phenomenal for mail. It's a dream to type on." For 90 minutes, Jobs explained why the iPad was the best way to look at photos, listen to music, take classes on iTunes U, browse Facebook, play games, and navigate thousands of apps. He believed everyone should own an iPad, but he refused to let his kids use the device. In late 2010, Jobs told New York Times journalist Nick Bilton that his children had never used the iPad. "We limit how much technology our kids use in the home," he said. Bilton discovered that other tech giants imposed similar restrictions. Chris Anderson, the former editor of Wired, enforced strict time limits on every device in his home, because we have seen the dangers of technology firsthand. His five children were never allowed to use screens in their bedrooms. Evan Williams, the founder of Blogger, Twitter, and Medium, bought hundreds of books for his two young sons, but refused to give them an iPad. And Leslie Gold, the founder of an analytics company, imposed a strict no screen time during the week rule on her kids. She softened her stance only when they needed computers for schoolwork. Walter Isaacson, who ate dinner with the Jobs family while researching his biography of Steve Jobs, told Bilton that no one ever pulled out an iPad or computer. The kids did not seem addicted at all to devices. It seemed as if the people producing tech products were following the cardinal rule of drug dealing: never get high on your own supply. This is unsettling. Why are the world's greatest public technocrats also its greatest private technophobes? Can you imagine the outcry if religious leaders refuse to let their children practice religion? Many experts, both within and beyond the world of tech, have shared similar perspectives with me. Several video game designers told me they avoided the notoriously addictive game World of Warcraft. An exercise addiction psychologist called fitness watches dangerous, the dumbest things in the world, and swore she'd never buy one. And the founder of an internet addiction clinic told me she avoids gadgets newer than 3 years old. She has never used her phone's ringer and deliberately misplaces her phone so she isn't tempted to check her email. "I spent 2 months trying to reach her by email and succeeded only when she happened to pick up her office landline." Her favorite computer game is Myst, released in 1993 when computers were still too clunky to handle video graphics. "The only reason she was willing to play Myst," she told me, "was because her computer froze every half hour and took forever to reboot." Greg Hochmuth, one of Instagram's founding engineers, realized he was building an engine for addiction. "There's always another hashtag to click on," Hochmuth said. "Then it takes on its own life, like an organism, and people can become obsessive." Instagram, like so many other social media platforms, is bottomless. Facebook has an endless feed. Netflix automatically moves on to the next episode in the series. Tinder encourages users to keep swiping in search of a better option. Users benefit from these apps and websites, but also struggle to use them in moderation. According to Tristan Harris, a design ethicist, the problem isn't that people lack willpower. It's that there are 1,000 people on the other side of the screen whose job it is to break down the self-regulation you have.